Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Our guest, Gary Schwartz, who has written the wonderful book, The Living Energy Universe. We're trying to connect with him. He's been on the road, so as soon as we have that connection, we'll be bringing him into the show. But meanwhile, what I wanted to do was start off with a thought that I really, really like, and it's by Nadja Piatka, and I don't know that it's especially original. I think this kind of thinking has been around for a long time, but I liked the way she said it. This is what she said. Nadja said, look at adversity as an opportunity to discover your strengths, because there are opportunities galore out there. Thomas Edison said it well. If you did all the things in life you were truly capable of, you'd astound yourself. Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful statement to make? We would astonish ourselves if we recognized what we were capable of doing. So many times I think we get in our little mental boxes. Oh, gracious, I know I do. What about you? Do you ever get stuck thinking, oh, I just can't do that? Oh, my goodness, I've got a problem. I just don't know how to do that. I was going through some material today, and this one gentleman had sent me his book, and he said, you can learn how to be a creative thinker. You can learn how to be a problem solver. How many times do we affirm for ourselves that which we really don't want demonstrated? But we have developed a habit of saying, oh, I just don't do that. I find myself saying that every once in a while. And it's almost like it's on an automatic pilot kind of thing. You've got that little button that says when you don't know what else to say, go to automatic pilot. And I'm beginning to pay more attention to some of those automatic pilot buttons, which we all have them. We need to realize that we can always expand. We can always grow. Many times when we make a statement about ourselves that we're not capable of doing something, and not in all cases, but most of the time, and think about this, we'll make a statement that we're not capable of doing something because we really don't want to do it. It's not that we're not capable of it, but instead of saying, I don't want to be bothered with this, I don't like it, I really don't want to do it, instead we'll say, oh, I'm just not capable of that. That's ridiculous. We really need to be aware of what we can do, how we can do it, when we can do it, and where we can do it. Well, that'll come when we're educated enough to be able to do it. All of these things come together. And it is a process that I think can be just absolutely magical. So when I saw that by Nadja, I thought, that's a very good way to start off the show. You never know what you're really capable of unless you put yourself out there to try. And again, I think, just repeating myself, we adopt these automatic buttons within ourselves because maybe that's how we were indoctrinated. Maybe that's the idea that we think we're supposed to do. It's like a man maybe saying, oh, I could never knit, or, oh, I couldn't do, make a dress. Well, for heaven's sakes, tailors have been doing things like that for generations. What's a tailor? How is a tailor different from a seamstress? Not really. They're just two different terms. Knitting? What's the big deal? There's a lot of men that are very, very good at doing things like that. So we get stuck in these little paradigms. Women saying, oh, I just can't do plumbing. Well, trust me, if you had to do it, you would be able to do it. And most women would be able to do it quite well. Do they want to do it? Heck no. But that's okay. So if you say you choose not to do something, that's far better than saying, oh, I just can't do it, because that's not a true statement. So understand, if you hear words coming out of your mouth that you're not technically savvy, or you just really cannot do certain things, cook a souffle or whatever may come into your mind, stop and think about your words and ask yourself a question. Why is it that I have taken that positioning? Why is it that I'm saying those words? Are those words the truth? It really takes a lot of courage to learn how to become a problem solver. But what I find so interesting is that if you have a group of people and there is a problem, regardless of what their educational level might be, they could be super PhD or they could be a third grade graduate. But if something's thrown out into the pot of a group of people and you say, in their mental pots, and you say, look, we've got this situation. What kind of ideas can you come up with? You might be amazed at what you're able to do. It's really fascinating. And I find people are so very, very resourceful. So don't ever give up on yourself, whatever you do. And by the way, for those of you listening or waiting for Gary Schwartz, we're trying to get in touch with him. His wonderful book, The Living Energy Universe, we were going to be talking about that today, and we are waiting for his call. Apparently, he is on the road, and we are trying to make that connection with him. Now, I wanted, on that line of being able to do just about anything, there is a great guy, and his name is Patrick. Patrick is right here in my own state here, Washington, and he said he really was in the pits. He said, I live in a place that's absolutely magical. I can see the Cascade Mountains. He said, we have a nice home. We have horses. I've got so much to be grateful for. But I was in this state of mind. My whole life was absolutely gray. I was not enjoying life at all. I could not see the beauty. I just really was not happy with anything. And he said, this one day, he comes home, and something very special happens. Well, you know what? We've got Gary with us. We're going to put off that special something with that story about Patrick, and we are going to welcome Gary Schwartz. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. I apologize for being late.
Well, you know what? It's going to work out just fine. We'll
perfect.
Have a break at the bottom of the hour,
okay.
And then if you're okay, stay another 15 minutes, and we'll have that chance to visit with you, because your book, The Living Energy Universe, is absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you. I look forward then for our having a conversation.
Few strokes always works, right? Okay. Gary, I want my audience to know about you. You're a professor of psychology, surgery, medicine, neurology, and psychiatry. I love that. You're just a man that has so many skills here. You're the director of the Center for Frontier Medicine in Biofield Science and the director of Human Energy Systems Lab at the University of Arizona. You have become very well known internationally for integrating mind-body medicine, energy medicine, and spiritual medicine. You have published more than 450 scientific papers. And you're just a man that has such a marvelous attitude about life. And it's such a joy to be able to interact with someone who has all of those medical credentials and has taken the time to write The Living Energy Universe. Now, you say that this is a fundamental discovery that is transforming science and medicine. I want you to tell my audience how you came about to write this book and why. Why?
Sure. Well, you know,
it's a
wonderful question. The truth is that the writing of this book was actually inspired by somebody who heard me give a lecture. Andrew Weil, who you may know, who has written many books and director of the program Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, he used to have what were called Integrative Medicine Weeks at Canyon Ranch, which is a health resort. And physicians from all around the country would come together and spend a week at Canyon Ranch, and they would receive lectures on all aspects of complementary and alternative medicine, including nutrition and exercise and relaxation and so on. And on Wednesday evenings, I would give a lecture on energy medicine. And I talked about the whole idea of systemic memory and the basis of what became the Living Energy Universe book. And there was a particular physician who actually came up to me afterwards and was very intrigued with the work. And he, after he started, you know, consulting and assisting in the lab, one day he called me and he said, in a meditation, it has come to me that you must tell your story, and you must tell your story now, and you must tell it from your heart as well as your head. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you need to write a book. And that's actually the inspiration for writing the book, was planted in my mind by a physician who heard me talk about this work. And then he, by the way, continued to facilitate my taking the time to write this book and then finding an editor and agent for the book and so on. So I can genuinely say that, and honestly, you know, humbly say that although this, you know, idea originally came to me when I was a professor at Yale, and I had been nurturing it for some time, and it was a very challenging and sometimes frightening idea, that if it wasn't for his vision and his encouragement, that book would not have appeared.
What I like about this story that you've just shared is that this physician went into meditation. And
yes,
in the meditation, then this insight was revealed to him.
That's correct.
And I know with my audience, they're not going to think that's woo-woo stuff, but there might be some people in the medical field, if they heard that, they'd say, oh, for heaven's sake, give me a break. What are you talking about here? Let's come down here to terra firma.
Right.
But really, what happens is when you quiet the self,
that's correct,
when you allow the self to enjoy that period, whether it is for 5 minutes or whether it is for 5 hours, where you just allow yourself to be that facilitator for clarity,
mm-hmm,
those things happen.
Absolutely. And remember, these are physicians who are open to complementary and alternative medicine. I mean, this particular physician, he had multiple homes, but he actually flew in from Hawaii to come to Tucson, Arizona for this meeting. And he was a regular meditator. So for
mm-hmm
him, this was not a novel process, but it was a novel experience for him to receive this, quote, guidance that he would then pass on to me and do so with a sense of responsibility.
Dr. Jonas Salk, you have a quote in your book, and it came from his book, The Anatomy of Reality.
Yes.
The Merging of Intuition and Reason. And I've never read that book. That's one I really should. But you said in here, he says, when intuition and reason come together to become a system, join hands and embrace to achieve a common goal, what emerges is greater than either alone.
That's
and
right.
I think that is so true. It's part of our human package. And when we can do it, I mean, this man saved the lives of millions of people with what he and his associates were able to do with the polio vaccine.
That's right.
And what a wonderful statement by him to recognize that there are those flashes. I think anyone who has been a recognized leader, and I mean really a leader, I'm not talking about a flag waver, I'm
mm-hmm
talking about someone that's really a leader, that walks the walk, talks the talk, and teaches and encourages others to do the same and to reach their own potential. To me, that's a leader. He is a man that did exactly that. So he recognized this part. And anyone that I've ever known that has done that, they are very honest and very open about it, because often their flashes of insight may come when they're baking a loaf of bread or taking the garbage out to the trash or falling asleep. One scientist, I can't remember his name, used to train himself so when he dropped the spoon, he'd remember what's going on in his mind.
Hmm. Yeah,
so it's amazing.
It is amazing. And one of the things that's happened to me, particularly over the past, I would say, 10 or so years, as I've come to take this ever more seriously, that my intuitive side has substantially increased and is ever more integrated with my rational or reasoning mind. And I will literally and very consciously in meditation or in the middle of the night if I wake up, I will go into a state where I, quote, clear my mind and either spontaneously, quote, surrender to whatever comes in or to, so to speak, ask the universe a question and then allow for surprises to enter my mind. And what's really remarkable is that one can train oneself to become open, to enhance one's intuition, and then one can explore and follow where those intuitions take one. And more often than not, I've found that they are at least as valuable as my, reasoning mind.
Well, they are meant to go together.
Absolutely.
You have to have disciplines. You can have all the most wonderful stuff given to you in mind. You can have all kinds of ideas, but if you cannot practically apply them, big deal.
Absolutely.
Who cares? Write a book, maybe. But if you can't use them, if it cannot empower an individual, that's what I've had an attitude about ever since I got involved in the study of mind. If it cannot be used and be applied in a practical way, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
You can go draw bunny rabbits, for all that matter.
Yeah. It's interesting. I never realized this when I was younger. But I had training as a jazz musician, and I've even played professional jazz and rock and roll for about 10 years in high school and college. And what I didn't realize at the time was that my mind was being educated to combine learning the skills, the techniques, for example, of being able to, and I came pretty close to mastering technique of guitar. That's all very logical, it's all very rational, it's all very mechanical. And then there's the other side, there's the creative side of learning to be able to, hear complex melodies and harmonies and have spontaneous creative riffs and so on to emerge. And both of them were essential. You could have all the skill in the world, but if you don't have the creativity, you have nothing to play. On the other hand, you can have all these creative images come to your mind, but if you can't manifest them, if you can't produce the technique to do them, then they're just silently in your head. But it's the joining of those two. And as you know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, which relates to one of the fundamental ideas of the idea that all systems have memory.
You mentioned a word right at the beginning when we were talking, and that is the systemic memory process.
Yes.
And in your book, you say it's 100% universal, non-specific, and not prejudicial, which I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it has any biases. It just is. Explain to my audience what the systemic memory process is.
Sure. Very, very simply, a system, it doesn't matter what the system is, whether it's oxygen and hydrogen making water, or whether it's two strands of molecules coming together to make DNA, or whether it's you and I talking on the telephone, we're becoming a system, or whether it's the Earth and the Sun interacting. In any system, what happens is one part, we'll call it A, it doesn't matter what A is, sends information and energy to B, and it doesn't matter what B is, and then B sends energy and information back to A. And that's what's called a feedback loop. The information from A goes to B and then is fed back to A. And as I said, A and B could be oxygen and hydrogen, or it could be two neurons, or it could be you and I talking, whatever. Now, when I was analyzing this process of what happens when energy goes from A to B and back again, and then it happens over and over and over, which is what's called a recurrent feedback loop, and I explored that process, actually, initially in the fantasy of my mind. I took a ride with an electron in a resonating circuit after following my hero, who was Albert Einstein, who took a ride with an electron when he was a teenager, and from that had the experience of what led to, ultimately, the general theory of relativity. What I realized when I took that ride was, and the simplest way to summarize it, is that what goes around and stays around, In other words, if the information and energy is going from A to B and back again, and it stays around, meaning it doesn't all disappear, what goes around and stays around evolves around.
And fascinating stuff.
It's a fascinating idea, and what's interesting about this is that if it goes around and stays around, not only stays around, but it evolves around, then what we have happen is we have this realization that this, quote, system, whatever it is not only going to have memory, but this memory is going to evolve or grow over time. So it's not only memory, it's, as in dead memory, it's a very alive memory. It's in a memory that has the possibility to further grow with information. And since this is what I'm calling a system, and I didn't invent the term system, you know, this idea has been around for a good 100 years and is part of the mainstream of contemporary science. What this said is that anything is a system, and anything that has recurrent feedback has memory. And what that means is that therefore atoms have memory, and molecules have memory, and all cells have memory, and organs have memory, and all organisms have memory. And when you and I develop a relationship, our relationship has a memory, that the Earth as a system has memory, that the solar system has memory, the galaxy has memory. It doesn't matter what the system is. As long as there's information and energy circulating in a recurrent feedback loop, there's going to be an evolving memory over time. And that's what the fundamental prediction was. And that, of course, prediction takes us to all kinds of phenomena. By the way, apparently there's a new movie coming out. I have not seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Eye. Have you heard about this?
Is that based on the book by Arthur C. Clarke?
I don't know what it's based on, but very briefly, because I was approached actually just yesterday and today by someone who was involved with the production of the film, and then someone else with the TV program that is going to be interviewing one of the either writers or actors from the film. It's going to be a nationally released film. But it's basically a story of a woman who has cornea transplants. And so she's now receiving transplants that were in another person's eyes. And after she has transplants, not only does she, quote, see, but she starts seeing unexpected things, because she's actually in part picking up the memories of that which was stored in the cornea. And in the book, The Living Energy Universe, I actually describe research that Paul Pearsall had done and others, which I did some collaborative work with him, where of heart transplantations, of people who had heart transplants, and then after they received the transplants, some people began literally expressing some of the changes in their personality and so on that actually fit the histories and the memories of the donor's heart that was now living inside them.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I love one of the quotes that you have in your book by Dean Radin. He said, "You're wacky before you succeed. Afterwards, you're a genius." And I just thought that was so true, that it's so amazing, because here we are living in a time. For example, there's a new process, I was sharing it with my listeners yesterday, called angiogenesis, where it's a new procedure for the heart, dealing with a protein that is injected into the heart that allows the body to do what it would normally do when you have clogged arteries. It starts creating new connections so there can be a better blood flow, and it's a fascinating, fascinating process. Well, after I'd read that article, talk about synchronicity, I talked with a physician who is from Europe, and he said, "Oh, I know the person that started out with that, and boy, I'm going to get you all kinds of information on it because of the research that's been done." And all of this is with proteins. And I think here we are in today's world. Due to the technology, we have been able to evolve. We have learned so many things. And it's a process of consciousness. And everything that you've been talking about is complementary to that. Because as we become open to it, instead of staying in old paradigms, instead of taking an attitude of, this is the way it's been done for the last 50,000 years, this is the way it's going to be done, I don't want to hear any other comments. Mm-hmm. We all have experienced people making statements to us like that, and so frequently it's so discouraging that you and others are demonstrating the courage to go against the current. Actually, the truth is you're going with the current.
I think that that's actually a very good way to put it. You know, you probably heard the phrase, please don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind.
Yes.
But what a scientist is supposed to do, and unfortunately many scientists don't do this, scientists supposedly are to follow the evidence where it takes them. And if evidence takes you in new directions and looking at things in new ways and challenging the ways that you were raised by what, for whatever reasons, your responsibility is to follow the data. Now,
mm-hmm.
if both reasoning and data take you to the same place, and it also fits with direct personal experience and intuition, so you've got this three-legged stool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you can sit on it. You know, now you've got three points that are all pointing in the same direction. And if we, as a result, can't change our minds, then we've lost the whole purpose of doing science in the first place. And, you know, we used to think that the Earth was flat. That's the way it looked. Everybody believed that at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out our perception was incomplete. It was limited, and we were wrong. We used to think that the sun revolved around the Earth. Everybody believed that because that's the way it looked by our limited experience. But science told us we have it backwards. We used to think that objects were solid, that, you know, matter was primary. But quantum physics tells us that what we call matter is actually mostly empty space, and it represents organized energy, and it's constantly vibrating and so on. Well, you know, so again, we learn that we have to change our mind. Well, it's the same thing with the systemic memory hypothesis. We used to think that only neurons learned, and everything else was basically, you know, not learning and not alive and didn't have memory.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's because we had a very limited perception. But when we look at it more closely, we discover everything that has feedback has memory. And the amusing thing is that everything has feedback. So if everything has feedback, then everything has memory. And therefore, by the way, in principle, everything has consciousness.
That's true. Before we go to break, I want to read one of the quotes you have in your book. The reception of a new paradigm often necessitates redefinition of the corresponding science. Some old problems may be relegated to another science or declared entirely unscientific. Others that were previously non-existent or trivial may, with a new paradigm, become the very archetype of significant scientific achievement. That was by Thomas Kuhn. Mm. My guest today is Gary Schwartz. His wonderful book is The Living Energy Universe. And we're going to wrap your minds about some concepts that I don't think you would have considered before, but when we come back, I think you will. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go anywhere now, because we're going to come back with Gary Schwartz and the Living Energy Universe. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel. My guest today is Gary Schwartz. The wonderful book is The Living Energy Universe. Gary, in your book, you make a statement, everything you've read and will read in this book reflects the evolving vision that comes from sitting on the shoulders of those who've come before us, the scientists and the mystics we honor in this book. They are the pillars, we are the children. Their memories are part of the storehouse of our personal memories, hence, they are literally part of our individual consciousness and provide the foundations for our minds. I read that and I put in the margin of the book, true achievers and their heroes, because many of them suffered horribly for stepping outside of the box of whatever generation period they were in.
That's correct.
And so here we are today. We have the same stinking attitudes. Now, maybe that's too strong a word, but I don't think so. We have people in science and in medicine today that are not any different from the people that lived in the 1600s. They have this mind-shut positioning, and it says if it's not on page 3 of this particular physician's death reference, I'm sorry, I'm not going to buy into it, don't even waste my time.
That's correct.
Gary, how in the blue blazes do you handle someone like that besides ignore him?
Well, I try to do it gently because, first of all, I sympathize with their dilemma. You know, it's very hard and threatening for them to be challenged by information that they can't make sense of and for which they have received financial support and professional support and so on. And most people who hold rigid ideas, they're not typically happy people. They typically get very angry. They typically get very frustrated. And they don't have the joy of having an open mind and an open heart. They don't have the... They can't even have the fun of discovering. One of the things that I try to do is very much keep my, if you would, my child heart alive. So even though I'm 63 years old now, I basically feel like, although I get tired more easily, but I basically feel like an 11-year-old
mm-hmm.
or younger.
Mm-hmm.
And this playfulness and this, and also gratitude for being able to learn. And so on. Also, as you know from having read the book, I talk about the whole question of, about humility and about feeling comfortable about being wrong. What I teach my students is I say my accuracy in predicting results from experiments is less than 40%. That means more than 60% of the time or more I'm wrong. And I said what I explained to them is when I'm wrong, I usually find that the universe is much more interesting than I am. So for me, it's the surprises. For me, it's what I don't know, which then takes me to what I can learn that's new. And I think that, if you would, that philosophy is, I consider myself extraordinarily fortunate that partly through my upbringing and partly through my proclivity, I've been able to hold on to that. So although professionally, I tell people that I live with the sword of Damocles hanging over my head within the university setting, because I do things that are very controversial, and so it's, quote, dangerous to my career, to my reputation, and so on, for me to do these things. At the same time, I sympathize with those individuals who are so threatened by change
mm-hmm.
that they have to use swords. to protect their themselves.
I think that that is very common to the human experience, at least in my observation, and I am far removed from claiming that I know it all. But I've seen it happen so many times, where human beings, we have a particular programming that we have chosen to adopt, however we have acquired
right.
it. And when we get away from it, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked your approach. And in response to my question of what the blue blazes do you do with somebody that's so obstinate, and you said you're gentle with them.
I try to be to the best of my ability. That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
And you talk about that in your book, how gentle sympathetic vibrations will not be sufficient to knock down something sturdy, at least not in a brief period of time. But if this mechanical resonance principle is implemented with sufficient energy over a long enough period of time, even very sturdy things can be led to vibrate out of control. Tesla, the great scientist, said that. Well, it's known that if you have a piece of steel and a drop of water continues to drop on it, that steel will break in half
mm-hmm.
if it's on the same point. And that's a very gentle force. And I think that is what's behind the martial arts. There are so many areas of disciplines with the mind.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Just very much that gentle approach where you don't try to force. Because when you force, then you become too rigid, and then your energy is used against yourself. Whereas when you're gentle, you just sort of blend around and then sort of wrap yourself around it, and all of a sudden someone's going along with you and they're saying, I don't know why, but for some reason I don't have the opposition anymore. What's going on here? Must be something in that tea. I know it has to do something with that.
Right.
But in all seriousness, you bring out so many different wonderful stories, different aspects of perception, paradigms of type that really a person's mind, if they are willing to look at it from the point of science as you are presenting it, mm-hmm. as well as a point of humanness, that's the word I'll use, and they'll say, well, I can understand this. This makes sense to me. And that's what I like about your book, The Living Energy Universe. You don't have to have a PhD in scientific learning to understand it.
Absolutely.
And yet someone else that has that can read it too and appreciate the technicality of some of the things that you bring up.
That certainly was the intent. I mean, I think that, you know, I wrote that book in 1998 and early 1999, and since then I've published I think four other books, and I did so learning with a professional writer who polished my writing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that if that book were to be updated or the next draft to be written, I would hope that it would even be more user-friendly than it has been. Now,
mm-hmm.
having said that, there's something about that particular historical version of that book which its comprehensiveness, you know, combined with, you know, its story and its ease of writing, there's something that is it's irreplaceable. And people have told me that, you know, I'll never be able to write another one like that, because of its unique combination of quotes and integration that I was inspired to do at that time. And you're reminding me of it, so thank you.
You're welcome. I really value it because I think it has so much good information. Now, I want to, for the sake of going back just a little bit and touching on something that you mentioned earlier about systemic memory and how people with transplants sometimes have these phenomenal experiences. And you have a story in here that Persol, who is just a wonderful man and interviewed
yes.
so many different people, talk to you about a woman named Glinda who had a transplant. And you called it a Sherlock Holmes heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the transplant, the heart had come from a murder victim.
Yes.
And the person that had received the heart got all of this information, could see who the murderer was.
That's right. And what's even more remarkable is that these were children.
Incredible.
it was children, and it was a, and this girl was having these the recipient of the heart. She was even having nightmares about all of this. It was very frightened, and her mother took her to see a child psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist worked with this young girl and realized that she was not crazy. She was just frightened, and she was getting details that went beyond what anyone knew about the crime. And from there, the young girl actually went to the was taken to the police by the psychiatrist, and that was in part how they actually helped to bring that person to justice. Paul actually learned this of this case directly from the psychiatrist who was involved with the therapy with this young girl.
When someone has an experience like this, it is something you will never forget as long as you live, because it will always create questions.
Yes.
Which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is always going to be considered by some as a fluke, but it happens more frequently than not, and that people are becoming more comfortable with being open about certain experiences, I think, is marvelous. That's what I like to think that this programming enables people to do, whether it's something they write or something that they want to talk about. You also bring up about water having memory, and a
yes.
wonderful woman by the name of Iris Bell.
Yes.
That did some research and wanted to find out why homeopathy worked, which in the United States it is not been, there's been suppressed quite a bit, but in Europe it is very commonly utilized. And it's been very effective. What did Iris, I know we've got a little bit of time here, what did Iris come up with in her research?
Well, Iris has been very intrigued with the idea that because homeopathy implies that water has memory. And Iris and I actually did some research with a device called the GDV, which is a gas discharge visualization system. We can actually measure that. You can measure that the water had different energetic and informational properties, that is, the different homeopathic preparations, even though chemically it looked the same. And in the book, The Living Energy Universe, in the appendix, I actually report on an experiment that we did, and actually the senior author was a gentleman who was going to be going off to medical school, who worked with me, and he we actually showed that not only could water have memory, but the way in which things crystallized in water could show evidence for the fact that information in the absence of matter would change the crystalline structure of what emerged when the water dried out. And we're 70% water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all living systems are living in water, and water is one of the most, turns out, complex and elegant dynamical memory storage systems. Now, again, 99.9% of scientists will say that's hogwash. But they'll say that's hogwash partly because they've been told it was impossible. They do not No, they've never read the Living Universe book. They don't know the logic, the mathematics, nor do they know any of the experiments that support it. So, you know, this is still very pioneering and very challenging and, of course, very far-reaching.
Very far-reaching, but it is an awesome, awesome book. If you want to step into the world of science, medicine, energy, and have a paradigm shift of understanding that's going to empower your life, The Living Energy Universe is a must-have book in the library, because each time you go back to look at it, you're going to find something new. Gary, do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes.
Yes.
They can go to www.drgaryschwartz, that's drgaryschwartz.com.
And Schwartz is spelled S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. Thank
right.
you so much for being my guest today, Gary.
Thank you very much. You ask wonderful questions.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoy it. I love doing it.
I could tell.
Yes. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852.
That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Phone lines are open, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also, 530-876-3222. Now, don't forget the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, which is being held February the 8th through the 11th at the LAX Hilton at 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles, is coming up. Oh my goodness, it's coming up so fast. I can't believe how quickly time is passing. Now, I am going to be there. We're going to be doing a live broadcast on February the 8th from that location. And if you want information about this, 800-367-5777 is the telephone number to call. Go to ConsciousLifeExpo.com. If you're interested in UFOs, the paranormal, psychics, prophecies, you want to come and see me, listen to the speakers that are going to be there. They've got about 100 speakers during those days. It is absolutely marvelous. Come on by, say hello. I'll be giving out my booth number probably starting next week, and it's just going to be a marvelous event, and I'll be speaking on Saturday the 9th. So we'll give you all of that information, and if you can come on out, call 800-367-5777, Conscious Life Expo.com. What a wonderful event, and I'm so pleased to be a part of it. So if you can be there, I would love to have you come by and say hello. Well, before we got Gary on the line, and I know we were running a little bit late, I started to tell you about this gentleman, Patrick Knowles, who lives in the state of Washington, and he was really in a very, very bad space. Well, his wife, on this particular day, well, here he is in this utterly magnificent environment. He cannot think of a thing to be grateful for. He is just in this state of depression that's awful. His wife comes in, and she always was just a wonderfully positive individual, and he wasn't really interested in this positive attitude. Have you ever noticed when someone is depressed, they do everything they can to ignore you? They just can't tolerate that joy because they're in their stuff? Well, what was happening with Patrick is that he had had an accident that damaged his legs, but more than that, he ended up having a stroke, and physically, it's just as if he kept going downhill. So here he is at home all the time. This is a man who had been very productive. The life gave him a kick in the seat of the pants and then some, so he wasn't too happy about it. So she comes in, and he's got pain all the time. And she said, "Hi, you know, look at me." And he just raised his head. And in her hand, she has this hunk of wood. That's all, just a hunk of wood. She gives it to him and she says, "Here, make a fish." Don't you just love it? Don't you just love women's logic? I think it's great. Well, his response was, "This, what is this? What in the world is this? Has my wife lost her mind? Make a fish? She's out of her mind. I don't even like the fish," she's thinking to himself. And this is what she responded to him with. She said, I spent $40 on this wood. I know we don't have a lot of money because of what has happened to you, but this is important to me. I want you to make me a beautiful fish. He came back with, I'm no woodworker, and I'm not an artist. And she just gave him this wife's eye, like, you do it, or else. Anyway, he couldn't get out of it. He said, I could barely get out of bed. How am I going to do any carving? And he said, if you had talked to him a few years previously, before he had had his accident, he would never have been able to describe depression to you. He said, I was Mr. Fix-It. I did all kinds of things. He said, my legs now didn't work because of the accident. I can't do anything. I can't even make a living. So his wife kept talking to him. She said, dear, look at how pretty the wood grain is. I met a wood carver named Keith, and he sold it to me. And he said, he'd be happy to help you learn how to do carving. Please say that you'll make me a fish out of this. And he just looked down at the wood while she was talking, and he said the wood grain was beautiful, and there were tiny black dots that looked like eyes. And then his mind started working, that creative self, and he said it reminded him of some salmon he had seen on television. And he asked her, what kind of wood is this? And she said, it's bird's eye maple. And he said, ah, that explains these black dots. So in his mind's eye, he said he tried to picture a salmon thrashing its way upstream, and he just said, oh, I'm not going to be able to do it. But anyway, he got the look from his wife again, and he said, why is it these women just won't ever give up? I just don't understand this. So he mumbled, okay, I'll try it. Well, he managed a few days later to get himself out of bed and to get dressed, and he said for the first time in weeks, he left his own home. And he said he had to really work hard at doing this. And he went over to this man, Keith's home, because he lived fairly close. And he said, hey, my wife talked to you the other day, and she gave me this block of wood, and she said, you're to make it into a fish. And he held up the piece of wood. And Keith then showed him how to pencil a design into the wood, showed him his carving tools, and he said, let me show you how you can use it. He said, this is called power carving. He got started, and do you know what happened? This man had such an empathy with what he was doing that the salmon started taking shape. That salmon he took to the Wood Sculpting Contest Fair, and he won. He won first prize at the Columbia Flyway Wildfowl Show in Vancouver, Washington. This man now is involved in carving, and he said, I have to thank my wife for doing this because my wife handed me a piece of wood and said, make me a fish. And the rest is history. When you're down in the dumps, you get busy, you do something. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. I'm just so grateful for sharing this time with you. And if you want, make a fish. Make a cake. Do something. But understand, you as a unique individual always have something very special to offer, and you're the only one that can make it happen. And do what is necessary. This is Donna. We'll be talking with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place. We're going to be talking about that wonderful movie, The Golden Compass. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.